Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we're here with Christopher Maggard. Christopher is actually a part of Roku Paranormal TV. I almost mispronounced that in my coughing fit earlier. I apologize, everybody. And to discuss his show, The Search, Existence Unknown. Welcome, Christopher. How you doing today?
Pretty good, man. How are you doing, brother?
Oh, can't complain. I've caught a little bit of an allergy or a cold, so if I cough on you, I apologize. So tell us a little bit about what got you started in the paranormal and a little bit about your show, and we'll kind of take her from there.
Well, actually, it started 30-some years ago when a bad attack happened to my sister when we lived in Southern California. I was just a little kid then, didn't really understand what was going on. And then as it progressed, I started reading books, trying to learn about it. And then I got old enough, in my late teens, I started going out and trying to investigate or check out urban legends, ghostly stories, and stuff like that. And it's been a journey ever since, trying to figure out why something that we can't see can physically attack someone alive. And so through the years, it's been seeing some quite amazing things, seeing some quite amazing places. And then I moved to Northern Kentucky. And then after that, I started my crew. Well, it started out as Tri-State Paranormal in Northern Kentucky, which later journeyed into The Search when we were asked by the producer of Paranormal Reality TV on Roku to do our own show because he liked our style. And he's seen me on Ghost Adventures a couple times, and then I said, sure, as long as we have our own creative control, because I don't want to be under someone's rule and thumb of how they depict how a show should go, and he said, sure. So that went 5 seasons with that.
Yeah, you've actually, your show was one of the, I like to call it, the intro into paranormal streaming, because Roku Paranormal TV kind of popped up and it was kind of the first paranormal stream, so to speak, before Amazon, Netflix, and a half a dozen other people tried it. And your show started to get a lot of interest, I guess you could say, pretty quickly, because it was the only streamlined paranormal television show for a little while, on top of a couple of other things that they have. So I think it's actually interesting, and I certainly appreciate you coming on. Tell us a little bit about your locations you've been at in the past 5 years.
The past 5 years? Oh, my God, man. Where haven't we been? A lot of places, man. Old South Pittsburgh Hospital in Tennessee. Mansfield, Ohio State Reformatory. Moundsville State Prison. a couple mansions down in Tennessee. I can't even remember the name of them right now. I'm putting together an hour and a half para documentary, if you want to call it, called Harlan, Kentucky's Manzo Shepherd Story, which, come to find out, we were asked by Tony Filosi and Lisa Peters. They've been after me for a while, for a couple of years, to come down to Harlan, Kentucky. And so I finally said yes, went down there for an event, and then found out how amazing and wild the history in Harlan, Kentucky is. And then I heard this, they told us about the story about Manzo Shepherd, and I was blown away. I was blown away with all the history in Harlan, Kentucky. There's all these little places throughout the Midwest that have so much history that people forgot about. And so that's what I'm doing now with the new show.
Well, that's actually a good thing to do. I know you're right. There's a lot of different locations across the whole United States, actually. And when you start getting into the South, that tends to increase a little bit, that people don't know anything about. I mean, here in Ohio alone, there's, gosh, everything from the riverboat all the way down to small schools and areas that I don't think anybody's ever really thought about, but they have a haunted history that's amazing.
Yeah, that's just like Posttown Elementary in Middletown, Ohio. My good friends Daryl and Brenda Wishman, they own that place, and it's the greatest mystery to me. But that place is so active, man. It's mind blowing.
Yeah, I haven't had the privilege of actually being there myself, but I've heard some stories from people that have been there. So it's really interesting to hear about. Well, I know that your show does a lot of unique things when you're out there, because you tend to keep it as real as possible. So let's talk a little bit about your aspect on the show, what you do, and how you try to keep it as real as possible.
Well, I guess it's not trying to keep it real, it's just being real. I mean, just being ourselves. I mean, we always just were just goofballs. But when it came down to brass tacks, man, we got serious. And we always tried experiments to try to connect to the other side, to try to find that link between our world and the unknown. And you can't really do that with private residents. That's not a place to do experiments at. So going to these large facilities, like even Waverly Hills or Sentinelville Rectory, just all kinds of places that we can actually take the time to go in there and do these experiments. And we started doing it with what is called vibrational frequencies and tone testing. And for years, we were using your typical voice recorders, you know, that you can buy either at Walmart or get online, eBay. And then, and I had a lot of history with Tascam equipment, so we started bringing in Tascams before they got real popular. And we started to find out with Tascams, you can pick up just about anything. And so when we would conduct our vibrational frequency tone test, we're able to capture things that normally most voice recorders can't hear at a different frequency level. And we've come to learn that in certain locations, depending on the tones, you get a better connection. Like in prisons, if you use certain tones, activity will amp up. But if you use those same tones in a hospital, it seems to kill the activity. So what seems like places that have more aggression with the tones, we had a better connection. And then you have to figure out different tones for like hospital settings and stuff. So we just try to be real, and if it didn't work, it didn't work, you know. We just look at the camera and go, hey, didn't work, on to the next, you know. Well, we didn't say on to the next, so that's not our tagline. I'm sure the next is. But we just, you know, you say, what did we do to keep it real? Just be ourselves, man. And, you know, nothing's perfect. We have no answers. Nobody has answers to all this. We're all trying to figure out what the connection is. And I think with the search for the five seasons that we ran, I think we got pretty damn close. I can say that much.
Now, with all of the searching that you did and playing around with the frequencies, the other equipment and the testing and so forth, what was the closest example that you can share with us? And I do encourage everybody to go look at the previous episodes. As far as I know, now correct me if I'm wrong, but because it's been a little while since I've been on Roku, but as far as I know, they're still there. You can search them. You can watch them. But what was the closest thing that you felt you got?
Through the vibrational frequencies or just in general?
In general, yeah. I mean, or if you want to do vibrational frequencies, totally up to you. It's all about you and what you want to talk about tonight.
Well, I think, I mean, when it comes to the vibrational frequencies, Patrick Shields, Chad Summerfield, Rick White, myself, we went to Waverly Hills, and we brought our friend Brian Cano along, and we set up our vibrational frequency creation, which we called Frank 2.0, and we set it up, fired it up, set up the crystals to help with the collect energy, and UV lights to help enhance the energy. Excuse me. And when we fired that bad boy up, I swear to God, it seemed like Waverly Hills just started vibrating. the whole building. And that's when we started hearing things being thrown, doors being slammed. And you know what? The funny thing is, on the second floor, there's no doors to be slammed. We look for items that were being thrown or even maybe plaster falling, but you can distinctly tell the sound between plaster falling off a wall or a ceiling or a door slamming or a woman screaming real loud. You can tell the difference. And I think that was the closest moment we actually connected from the reality that we live in to the unknown. And it was impressive. It was highly impressive. And I think what we come to figure out is that we're not really dealing with the paranormal anymore using the vibrational frequencies. We're actually dealing with atoms and molecules that retain our memories when we're alive. And as we die, those atoms leave our body and are in vibrational frequency. So if we hit the right tone with our tone test, with the tone of the vibrational frequency atoms that retain someone's memory, maybe we're connecting finally. That was what our hypothesis and our theory is.
Well, it's actually an interesting theory if you think about it. I mean, since when we die, what was us, in our belief at least so far, has to go somewhere else. It would be logical you should be able to tap into that. It's just a matter of figuring out how to do it. So why not tap into it with frequency? And radio frequency, harmonic frequencies, all of this stuff was here long before we were. We just happened to run into it. So that would actually make sense on a scientific level, at least. Let me ask you this, because you spent so many years in it. A lot of people do debates on science and the paranormal. You got both sides. You got people that say science works with the paranormal. You got people that say it doesn't. Now, I know from speaking to universities that delve into this from time to time, science can, and generally speaking, they come up with different conclusions than a lot of investigators do. But how do you feel about science and the paranormal?
I think science is a necessity, because we can't just go out. Everything that we use, even people that still use K2 meters, which I use mine for target practice, but they're all built through the concept of science. So technically, we're adapting science tools to what we're looking for in the field. But I think if you go on a broader spectrum, I think science can help broaden the field when we study more the unknown when it comes to EMF fields. The EMF fields that the planet retains is the strongest EMF field ever. So people can't get sick from EMF sickness. I talked to a guy who's an electrical engineer about that, and he built substations and is around high EMFs his whole life. He never had a problem. He says, in order for you to be affected by EMF fields, it has to be greater than what our own planet puts out to protect us from the solar rays and everything that comes from the sun. Science. There's science. So if you learn that, and once you learn the anatomy of a body, which is science, you can understand the unknown a little more. So I think science is a necessity. People that go out there saying we're using scientific methods, no one's a scientist. Unless there's an actual scientist with a degree in a paranormal team, then hey, he's got it. He can say what he wants. But none of us are scientists. I'm not a scientist, but I read books and I study. Patrick Shields, when he was with the crew, he studied books. Him and I sat days and days and went over different theories and concepts from Macho Kiku, who's, I don't know if you ever heard of him. He's a physicist theorist. He's amazing. His concepts of the unknowns, mind-blowing, all the way back to Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein says when the body dies, the atoms leave the body. And they stick around. They retain stuff. They retain our memories. And then they go back into the planet, and they become part of a leaf or a grass. And an animal eats that grass, and then we eat the animals. It's a vicious cycle. So you just think about that for a minute, and you think you just ate somebody's atoms down the road. Kind of weird.
It is an amazing part of science, though, that technically – well, it's not really technically. It's true that everything – that's born is connected in one way, shape, or form. And what that connection in the long run moves on to whatever else is born, whatever else is created, how whatever else evolves and so forth in that continuous circle of life, so to speak. It's an amazing thing to read about. I don't think a lot of people take credit in spending the time to read those books and to read some of those scientific theories. And I think they should, really. Let's talk about equipment a little bit, because I know you've spent a lot of time working with equipment, and I've seen you on several groups now. You've mentioned a couple of times some equipment, some misassumptions when you're out there in the field with equipment that people have brought on from some television shows and some things that people have adapted from those and so forth. And when I say that, by all means, nobody get me wrong. I'm a big supporter of all the paranormal TV shows, even the ones that are less believable than others. It's a very hard job for these guys to go out there and do that. They take away from their life. They work very hard. They're under some extreme rules in some cases when they get on major networks. But sometimes equipment and the way we think they operate are two different things. So give us your opinion on some of the equipment and what you found, how they've worked, and so forth.
Well, like MEL meters and K2 meters, especially MEL meters. MEL meters will actually pick up the IR signal off of a night vision camera. People need to understand that. So that could be misleading. EMF meters, if you move your hand just the right way when you're holding it, it will indicate motion on the EMF meter. It will spike up. Misconceptions. Our own bodies put off EMF fields. K2 meters. Garbage. I'm sorry. I don't care what anybody says. You got to study it. People need to study the equipment they're using. K2 meter will pick up anything from a cell phone signal, their radio signal, CB signal, TV signal, anything. Unfortunately, I had to disprove a break my friend's heart one day, because he put a K2 meter by this one doll that he thought it was causing the K2 meter to go off. And I said, let me show you something. And I text my wife right next to the K2 meter and sent it. As soon as I sent it, that K2 meter went crazy. And I did it every time on cue. And he's just, I felt so bad because he looked so sad. His heart was broken. I said, dude, I love you and I'm sorry, man, but you need to understand the equipment we're dealing with. So, now, with that being said, there is a guy out there, he's a very good friend of mine. He's brilliant. I call him a mad scientist. He's a genius. His name is James Clarida. He's coming up with groundbreaking equipment that, with the understanding of how these other pieces of equipment fail or misconstrued what people are seeing. So he's taking that and knowing not to go that route, and he's building these new devices that I find simply amazing. He's working on he built this device called Four after what me and Pat put together with Frank 2.0, the vibrational frequency beast, and he built the thing called Four, which is just like Frank on steroids, and it's an amazing piece of equipment. And I would say, as far as investing in some equipment, I would look up James Clarida on Facebook and talk to him. He's pretty brilliant. And then on the other hand, I'm so against ghost boxes. I can't stand that stuff. But I was, I went from a non-believer, skeptic of ghost boxes, spirit boxes, whatever you want to call them, to a semi pretty much blown away believer for one thing, a geobox. A friend of mine, Matthew Jackson from Paraholics, brought this amazing geobox that I've never seen in my life. And I can't remember who he said built it, but he gave me the breakdown on it, how it was built. And it didn't have that sound and all that. So I asked him and a good friend of mine, Mike Caldwell, they're both with Paraholics, to come to Old South Pittsburgh Hospital and bring it. And they did. And so, you know me, I'm just a typical guy. I'm like, all right, let's see what you got. Let's see what this thing is. let me see if I can disprove it. And the GeoBox started to have a conversation with me, saying my name, tell me not to go in this room. We're talking sentences. And I just stood there in disbelief. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I'm still blown away today. And I still want to try to disprove it, but I can't. I can't find a way to disprove it. And it's proven me wrong again at the Manziel Shepherd story when we filmed down there in Harlan, Kentucky. And it's just mind-blowing. So I guess it's pick and choose when it comes to equipment and really study the dynamics of how they're put together and what they're really used for. A lot of equipment use theremins, and I don't know if you know what a theremin is. But it's actually a type of a musical instrument that if the closer you put your hand to it, it increases in a tone. So a lot of bell meters and EMF meters have theremins in them. So those could be very misleading. So that's pretty much my take on equipment, I guess.
Well, that's the concept of some of these things when they went into the mass marketing for ghost hunters and people that didn't understand things, though. They used those things to be deceptive because, and it's not every piece of equipment, but it's some pieces of equipment. The reason they're crap in the first place is because they're designed to get reactions so that the average person spending this money will come back and spend more money and talk about it and sell it and talk about it and sell it. It's all a part of business and marketing. I mean, whether it be a television show or whatever it is, you market it. But you're right, when you're doing real investigation, you got to know the differences between those. That's why I love talking to real investigators like yourself and everybody else out there, because you have the inside track. I mean, as a radio host and a person that markets all the time, I can tag along with you guys and learn a lot. But it's better to hear it from the investigators that are out there, if that makes sense. leave it to the professionals to talk about professional things, so to speak. So I love it when you guys come on and you talk about your shows and you talk about what you're doing, because it shows the public the truth. And that's what they need to hear.
Right. I hear you.
So you spent a lot of time around these locations. You've worked with equipment. What is the scariest thing I think you've seen?
I don't know if it's about seeing, but it's, there's like two things that really freaked me out, man. And one is not paranormal, and one is, I guess you can call it paranormal. In OSPH, a long time ago when we first went there, we were doing a walkthrough trying to figure out how we're going to film it, getting the idea of the place, and I got slapped right in the middle of the face, right in the middle of the hallway, got slapped by something unseen. So that was not so much scary but unsettling, and made me mad because it wasn't fair. I got slapped, and I couldn't see who slapped me, so it wasn't fair. I think the most scariest place, we went to this hospital in Tennessee, and we was going to do an episode. When we got there, the place was riddled with mold. There was fungus growing up from the floors and the carpets. It was the middle of the ghetto. There was no way to lock yourself in from the locals in the neighborhood who were scoping our cars out. So I guess that was the most scariest thing. I think the living scares me more than the dead, because the living, you never know what they're going to do. They could jack you, jump you, shoot you, whatever. You just don't know. So I think that was the most scariest thing that my whole crew experienced. And we just turned around and left, told the owner, no, we're good. Our health is more important than your $500 in your pocket that you can, you have all this mold and fungus growing everywhere and can't even lock the place down and secure it. We're good.
Well, yeah, that could be very dangerous. Just inhaling those mold and those spores can get you sicker than a dog, so I don't blame you there. And I know locations can be fairly dangerous as it is. When you're walking into some of these places, you have faulty floors, you have faulty ceilings. If you don't control that and have the place locked down, you might have strangers coming in during that period in time. You just never know what you're going to run into. So that that makes perfect sense. When you were at the place and got slapped, out of curiosity, what floor were you on when it happened? Were you on the main floor or were you on one of the other floors?
Top floor, third floor.
Third floor?
By the where it's by maternity ward.
Uh-huh. So I've actually heard several stories similar to that. That's the reason that I asked. They've been slapped and pushed right around the third floor area near the maternity ward up there. So I just – that was amazing that you said that. That's the second time I think I've heard that from investigators I've interviewed. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know what's really interesting about Old South Pittsburgh Hospital is that I've been going there for a few years prior to my meeting my wife. And then we was going to go back again after I got married, and my wife heard me talking about it. And she told me that she knew of that place long before it was ever shut down. Her grandfather died there. And when she went and visited him in ICU on his deathbed, he was angry and scared because he didn't want to die. And so she showed me a picture of him. And the crazy thing is that the fact that people claim to see a tall, slender shadow figure roaming the halls, kind of aggressive at Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. And when she showed me a picture of her grandfather, he matched the exact description. So I took my wife down there. She went to the room where he died in. It was emotional for her. It was hard. And so now there's actually a memorial there I put there on the room that he died in at an ICU of him, and there's a picture of him. And so I guess Old South Pittsburgh Hospital has a little bit more of a personal connection to me now after meeting my wife.
Well, it makes total sense. It's kind of like my personal experiences with the Ohio State Penitentiary up here. I've had a few experiences because I'm so close to it. When I've went up there with investigators and went up there on the haunted tours. Now I know the average is you don't get much from the Ohio State Penitentiary, but there are some things there every now and then outside of echoes and so forth that just make you wonder. I actually got pushed at one point there, and there was really nobody around me. Everybody was at least 6-7 steps in front of me, so I still can't explain it. So it's interesting to talk about situations.
Doesn't that make you wonder what kind of energy, how much atoms or how much force of energy can cause that? And to me, that's just mind-blowing when either I got slapped or you got pushed or people say they got, you know, punched or whatever or shoved. It's mind-blowing that such a force of the unknown and unseen can cause that on a physical world that we exist in. And it's mind-blowing. And when stuff like that happens, it, for me at least, it makes me want to dig even deeper and study more about atomics or atomic theory and energy theories and stuff like that. So there's so much out there we don't know, man. It really is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And once you experience it, you do want to. That's what got me into it, is a personal experience where I was – physically attacked by something I couldn't explain, and I didn't know whether it was me, I didn't know whether it was my mind, I didn't know what was going on. And then as the house advanced, there were a lot of other people that dealt with situations in the particular house that it was in, so I have a laundry list of people that went in there that had experiences and so forth that I didn't tell them anything about it. They came to me. But it does make you want to think and then look and really research into things to figure out what's going on. You know, it changes your world in a lot of ways.
Absolutely, a little bit of a brief
pause. You're listening to BBS Radio Station 2. I'm Christopher Houston. We're here with Christopher Maggard, who has a Roku TV show on Roku Paranormal TV. We'll talk about the name of that at the end of the show here once again so that you can actually look into that. A little bit of local advertisement. The Goose Project will be here in Ohio. If you don't know anything about it, go to thegooseproject.com. There's a lot of wonderful speakers that are going to be there this weekend. The Marengo Flea Market in Marengo, Ohio, if you're in the Morrow County, is actually going to have a family fun day. They've got some education from the fire department, the EMF, the EMTs, bouncy houses, and over 23 vendors that are going to be carrying a little bit of everything from sporting goods to simple needs. So make sure that you stop in there as well. We've been speaking with Christopher Maggard. Christopher, I'm going to jump into a couple other questions for you, just because you have so many years and experience. We've talked a little bit about what you've seen on the scary side, but let's talk about the practical side. How often have you ran into investigations and situations where you think you've caught something, but it turns out to be something that's logically explainable, or sometimes just a little bit of the mind?
All the time. All the time, man. That's why you got to really know your sounds and really know photography and videography. It's, you got to really learn what sounds can create misleading sounds. For instance, I took a VN4100 Olympus voice recorder all the way up to a VN6200 and an 8000 and laid them down in a row. And we ran the audio. And this it was at Ross Opera House in Cynthiata, Kentucky. And the door opened. But we didn't know it was a door at the time. When we went and reviewed, it sounded like someone saying, "Help me," or something to that effect. But as you listen to each recorder, that what you thought was a word slowly became clear, and then you realize it was just a door. So certain voice recorders are very misleading. That's why I encourage people to study sound and learn sound, and then learn photography and videography, because what you see and hear can be misconception, or it can be misconstrued for the wrong thing. And if you don't understand what you're dealing with, listening to or seeing, you're fooling only yourself. So yeah, many times we've captured things, thought, "Oh my God, this is amazing." Then when we break it down, okay, we caught this on audio, and we go, "Okay, let's find the time slot on the video and see what it is." And then when we go back and forth and compare it, we're like, "Ah, that's it. That was a window blind, or that was a bird chirping at the window, or, you know, something very logical." It happens all the time, man. More so than anything that's ever captured of the unknown. I would say 85% of the time to 90% of the time, everything could be explained. And I learned that through the years. I was naive when I was younger. I thought a mouse fart was something paranormal. You know, just throwing it out there, far-fetched. But as the years gone by and I got older and wiser, I'm like, you know, there's less things being captured than there is actual. There's less things unknown being captured than there is actual things being physically explainable captured. If that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense, especially when you're dealing with the average situation. I know the very first, a little bit of a backstory, the very first investigation that I went out on, I was comfortable with watching most of the television shows, but I wanted to know the real inside case. We went into a Helltown here in the edge of Ohio. For those listeners that don't know Helltown, it's really not much of a haunted place, but it is a bunch of abandoned buildings and abandoned areas that has an incredible history where the state of Ohio actually pulled people out of their homes to turn it into a national park area, and it didn't end up fully coming through. I didn't know any of this. I was just tagging along. And some of the simple sounds, some of the feelings that you get, because you know you're on a ghost investigation, little things like that are very misleading until you start digging in and understanding things. So at the end of the investigation, when I thought I was listening and catching a lot of things, I had the investigators come down to me and say, "Well, this is what really was going on, Chris, since you wanted the truth. Let's sit you down, and you may have thought you heard this and this and this and this, but this is what you really saw and heard, and this is the reactions you were having because you thought it might be a ghost."
Right.
And it was a real learning experience. It gave me a chance to realize that, you know, there's a lot of key ins and outs, like you're explaining, that if you're not out in the field every single day, it's hard to decipher which ones are which, because most people that are out there are just watching the TV shows and they think it's cool. Well, it is a very unique thing, just so that all the listeners know, seeing and hearing all of this on television, but understand it's also television. In order to really get to the nitty gritty, if you want to learn the truth, the best way is to go to the source, which is people that are out there every single day, and ask them, because people like Christopher and everybody else will be glad to give their opinions. That's a part of what they do. So no, it makes perfect sense what you're saying, and I certainly appreciate you sharing it with the audience. Definitely. How many times have you went on a personal investigation? Like a personal residence?
In the early years, quite often, until it became when the popular TV show started being really talked about. People would ask if we're going to film this, or is someone from Ghost Hunters or Ghost Adventures going to come with you? I'm like, oh my God, really? And then gone to places where they said, you know, they don't know what's going on in their house, but it's a demon. Okay, and then we'd ask them, how do you know it's a demon? I just know it is. Well, then I'm sorry, I can't help you. That's not my job. That's the church's job. That's a man of God's job to handle demons, because you got it figured out and I don't, because I can't deal with someone that insist on that it's a demon. And so if they truly believe it's a demon, then I ask them in the most humblest way to reach out to their church, because there's nothing I can do. I'm not certified. I'm not qualified to go on a battle with a demon. Well, it's not my job.
Well, when you're dealing with the demonic, it's one of faith anyway, or at least I feel it's one of faith. So it's best to hand it off to those people that have the faith and know how to battle those situations than to try to jump in with the ego of, oh, I can stop it. So, that makes sense. Totally. Let me just ask you this. Do you believe in demons yourself?
I believe in a demon of men. But as far as the evil, unknown, inhuman, non-human demons, I can't say yes and I can't say no. I have not seen one in the years that I've been doing this. I've not experienced one, but that's not to say that they're out there. So it's hard to say, because I know there's one side, where there's light, there's dark. That good old saying, where there's day and there's night. I've dealt with unknown experiences, like the slap in the face. The attacks on my sister, I've seen it. I've witnessed it. So I know there's one side of the unknown. So there's got to be another side. It's just like, well, you got a good cop and a bad cop. So it's just, they know. Let me put it to you that way. I'm not going to say I want to meet one, because you got to be careful what you ask for. But if an opportunity came up and someone asked me to sit in an exorcism, then I would probably say, well, let me get prepared and help me to protect myself. And I wouldn't mind monitoring one. But as far as going face-to-face with a demon, I don't think I'd ever do it on my own if one popped up.
I can tell you from experience when it comes to exorcisms. Now, just so that everybody knows, and I'm very upfront about this, I was never in the room with an exorcism, but I was outside because I did the interviews for several people that worked with exorcisms at one point or another. Just from the sounds outside, I would not have wanted to have been in the room. I'm sure it would have been interesting, but I just, whether it was a physical problem with mental capabilities or whether it was something else, when you're standing outside that door and you're hearing what's going on, it's an eerie feeling.
Right. Imagine
that. Yeah, it's a very, very eerie feeling. So and after that particular experience, I told him, hey, look, guys, I have no problem doing the interviews for you, but I would prefer not being here at this point. I have had my experiences with what I could say could be demons. But the thing is with demons is it all revolves around faith. like you said, somebody that knows how to battle those should be there to direct you in your battles if you're ever dealing with them. And somebody that doesn't know shouldn't have anything to do with it or be naive enough to think that they know. Whether it's an evil force, whether it's an evil entity, whether it's something we create, I can't tell you. But I can tell you from my personal experience, what I saw, I simply could not explain. It wasn't right. physical, but it was there. And that's the strange thing about the paranormal. We all continuously keep going back to that. We run into situations where you just simply can't explain it. You ran into this, and it's, I don't know what's doing it, but by God, it was there.
Right, exactly.
So that's very interesting. Let me ask you this, because I ask all of my investigators on virtually every show I've ever done, how do you feel about Ouija boards?
I own one. It's not what the symbolism is for. It's how you use it, just like any tool, like a voice recorder or just standing in a room and inviting something. People say it uses your body because you got to put your hand on the planchette. Well, you got to hold a voice recorder. You're still holding a device. Your body walks around things that are constantly unknown that you can't see. You got to touch a wall, touch a floor to communicate with the unknown. So it's not what they're used for or what the symbolism is for or what society has made them out for. It's how you use it. To me, it's a board game. It's a collector. I've talked with Robert Murch, who, if anybody knows about him, he's, I would say, one of the leading authorities on spirit boards and very knowledgeable. So Ouija boards, my wife won't let me bring it in my office. She says we can keep it in the garage, but it ain't coming in the office. I'm still working on that one. But, you know, I respect people's wishes not to bring them around or do seances and stuff like that. I respect that. Because people have a genuine fear of them. And you can't change that in anybody. You can try to educate them or send them to somebody to be educated about it. But if you think about it, that type of communication with the unknown has been going on long, long, long time before Renaissance era, the Egyptians, the Romans, way back to Chinese, ancient Asian spirit communication. They use a form of letter communications to their relatives and stuff. So it's been around for centuries. So it's just being knowledgeable, just like everything else, just understanding it and respecting what you have.
Well, that's the thing I think people don't realize right off the bat is any form of communicating with the other side, you are always going to have a risk. And Ouija boards are no different than that. You're opening yourself out and you're asking if something is there, and you're looking for those answers. Now, 99.9% of the time, you're not going to find something that's incredibly evil, but you've got that less than 1% that may happen. And the reality is, it's either there and wants to communicate, or it's not, or doesn't want to communicate. I mean, it can just simply be there and not want to communicate, but whether it be a Ouija board, whether it be a voice recorder, whether it just simply be you standing in a haunted house and going, hey, are you there? All of those are just as dangerous as they are as simple and as easy to do. It's not really very complicated. It's exactly the way you explained it. It's a tool like anything else. And in that tool, it's just like using a screwdriver. It's just like using a drill bit. It's just like using a hammer, or it's just like using a forklift. You can use it the right way, you can use it the wrong way, but either way, it's still dangerous. It's kind of like a gun. You know how to use a gun if you're out hunting, but that still doesn't mean you're not going to hurt yourself by accident. That's why I always ask. Most investigators state about the same thing that you do, but every now and then you get somebody that says, I just stay away from them. And personal opinion is very, very important when you're dealing with faith and you're dealing with the paranormal. Like you said, you simply can't change people's opinions. Either they will use something like that or they won't. Either they think it's evil or they're not, and that's okay. That's a part of personal opinion, as long as you educate yourself really well and make that decision. The biggest problem is too many people just deal on social media and they deal on television and so forth, and they don't realize that the paranormal is so much more extensive than that. and so much more interesting. How often have you actually dealt with universities when you're dealing with the paranormal? Have you had a chance to talk to college professors and psychiatrists and scientists that are out there every now and then? Because I know they delve all the time in the paranormal. They just do it a little bit differently than you do as an investigator, if that makes sense.
Right, it does. I've talked to a psychiatrist years ago and one professor many years ago, when I was still trying to understand what happened to my sister when I became in my late teens, early 20s. And they all have their own perspectives on things. And, you know, I think they have a common denominator that they both reach, and that was, if you believe in something, it will happen. So you got to be careful in what you believe in. If you think you see a ghost, you will see a ghost. If you think there's something in there is something going to be in there. So you got to be very careful on your thought process when you're looking for something in the unknown, because power suggestion is a very powerful thing.
Well, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And it happens on a regular basis. We were taught in marketing and sales, and I actually spent a little bit of time teaching this as well, off of my mentors, that with power of suggestion, positive thinking can take you a long way. If you believe you're going to be a success and you talk about being a success, you will be a success. If you believe you're going to fail, you will fail. Well, ghosts are the same way. You know, if, like you said, if you believe that you're seeing a ghost and you want to believe that you're seeing a ghost and you fall into the hype of some of the locations and the histories and so forth, well, you're probably going to see a ghost.
Yep, exactly.
So that makes perfect sense. Well, let's talk a little bit about you, what you're doing here in the future. You mentioned that a little bit earlier, where people can find you. I know you have multiple websites, and then go into a little bit about your television show as well on Roku so that they can go back and play back the episodes and get to know you a little bit more.
Yeah, because I got to wrap this up pretty soon. I think the nurse is waiting outside my door. Right now, I just finished my first book, which was a very interesting challenge, Chasing the Haunt. It tells my whole life story up till today. I'm now the show, The Search for Existence Unknown, is still available on Roku, but you go to paranormalreality.tv to find that. But now I'm doing a whole new series called TSEU Urban X. It's all about forgotten history and how some of these places affect communities and what they did for the people back in the early years when these places were up and running, and how it affected the lives and the positive and the negatives, and really digging deep into the dirt of history that a lot of people just walk over and seem to have a blind eye to. So the Urban X series is it's launching. I'm having my first film on it premiering October 7th in Harlan, Kentucky, about the Mansell Shepherd story. You know, you can contact me through my website. It's tspnorthernkentucky.com. You can find me on Chris Maggard on Twitter and Chris at TSP, not on Twitter, Chris at TSP on Twitter and Chris Maggard on Instagram. Of course, you find me on Facebook as well. But I'm also going to have a new website up because January of this year, I launched my production company officially, Creepy Attic Productions. I use that to film my own show. Plus, I do other filming for Reed and Ashton Masterson, the amazing illusionists and magicians. I film for them. Rick Hayes. I've done a lot of filming for him, so I'm kind of on a wide plane of jobs that I'm doing with Creepy Attic Productions. But the search still exists, but it's just called Urban X now, so it's a little bit more detailed with more history, forgotten history, and the urban legends that go to all these places.
That'll be an amazing thing to watch. I love urban legends, and I love to hear about the history. I know that more people need to delve into it, too, so I'm looking forward to it. Well, you've been talking to Christopher Maggard, host of Roku Paranormal TV's The Search, Existence Unknown. He's had some very unique insights. Christopher, I want to personally thank you before we start wrapping up here for coming on the show here, Paranormal Truth and Reality. It's been a real pleasure. You're always welcome to come back and promote the show when you come, when you get it running, and any other projects that you're doing. I absolutely loved watching some of your stuff on Roku, so I think you're an amazing man, and I certainly appreciate it. Next week, so that everybody knows, Laura Lee Blonde will be on. Laura Lee, due to some medical conditions, was going to actually do some individual situations on paranormal television, but because of her medical condition, she decided to work live on Facebook and live on YouTube with the television show herself that actually talks about radio talk show hosts and shows some of the more macabre areas of the paranormal and so forth. So make sure that you tune in for that. And you know, I mean, it's been a wonderful time. Christopher, do you have anything you want to close with?
Just one more thing, man. Everybody be safe. Be careful what you're doing out there, and educate yourself and be good to each other, especially in these days in the way the country is going right now. So everybody be good to each other and respect each other and respect what's around you. And I appreciate you having me on, brother.
That's not a problem. I certainly appreciate you coming on. Like I said, you're always welcome to come back on. I'm going to go ahead and close out the show with my statement that I do every single week. As you're noticing, remember, when you're in the paranormal, the truth should always be the reality. You've been speaking with Paranormal Truth and Reality and Christopher Maggard. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We'll talk to you next week, and have a very good night.